TLS is go for main engine start.
Go at throttle up. Negative return. Then we see a nominal MECO. Welcome to space.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Off Nominal. How you doing, everyone? How's it going out there in the world?
What a week. It's a big week.
What a week.
Yeah.
Big week. Yeah.
Huge week. The most important for so many reasons.
The most important news, of course, is that one of my t-shirt designs got scooped up by scraping bots again.
Yes. That's I love when that happens.
They moved very, very quickly. So it's interesting to see that again. But we're here with Matt Kaplan this week. Matt, welcome. I'm so excited to have you on the show. We're going to talk about all kinds of, I don't know, fun stuff about your career, because I'm very interested in that and whatever weird stories you have. So welcome.
I am so glad to be here with you guys. All of my colleagues who've already visited the show have given such great reports that I'm just looking forward to having a good time and enjoying my beverage of choice, which I'm sorry may embarrass you.
Oh, let's see it. What you got?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Is it a Coke?
No. What is it? But you're close.
What is it?
This is Dr. Pete.
Dr. Pete?
Is that new to you? Yeah. Uh-huh.
I don't even know if that's a real thing. I'm going to have to Google that real quick.
Yeah, it's a real thing. Honest. It's a real thing from a different kind of scraper. highest form of compliment, by the way, you know. And what this is the Dr. Pepper ripoff. There it is. Dr. Pepper ripoff from SodaStream. I am a recent fervent convert to the SodaStream community, having read that it saves you a lot of money on soft drinks. And, you know, they have some real stuff like Pepsi, but they don't have Dr. Pepper. I guess they couldn't cut a deal with them. So Dr. Pete, which is like five stars, it's way up there. So, you know, I've just proven that I am exactly as big of a geek and a square as your audience may have already suspected. But yeah, that's what I brought to the party.
You love the knockoff doctors. Yeah. Hey, man, I'm in Pennsylvania. We've had our share of knockoff doctors lately. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So this is just nothing new here.
Hey, do you get to the beach often in Pennsylvania?
We do. We eat some crudite at the beach all the time. So, yeah, there's some local humor here, Jake. I don't know if it's made it down your neck of the woods, but...
It's all going right over here. Yeah, it's all.
What are you drinking over there, Jake?
I got myself a beer this week. So I went with a kind of an old standby here, Boca Negra from Monterrey. It's just a nice refreshing pilsner, real simple. Not much pomp and circumstance today.
I did a Boca themed drink the week that Artemis 1 launches on the day of my daughter's wedding.
The day of my daughter's wedding.
So, well, then yeah, allow cheers, me everybody. To be the only one that has a somewhat thematic beer, because I was surveying the options in the old craft beer store to see what was the most SLS themed thing I could find. And because I'm in Philadelphia, where there's no space beer to be found ever, except for like maybe somebody accidentally put one in the truck one time, I have a Victory Cloudwalker, which is orange themed, and I feel like Cloudwalker kind of evokes the aesthetic of what it looked like as that thing rose on the solids. So I feel like I nailed the thematic, you know? So there you go. That's what I got. Oh, you got the Artemis shirt. Matt's got the orange shirt on. So
yeah. See, we're all good.
I got an Artemis hat. I forgot to put it on. I have an Artemis hat. They gave me the cape. So too bad.
You went to the first launch attempt and all you got was a hat.
Yeah, that's pretty much true. I and a few good interviews. I get, you know, the boss, the science guy, gives me $5 every time I wear this in front of a crowd. So it's worth it.
I do have a red shirt on, which is also thematic for Artemis after the red team that everyone was all about.
See?
Yeah. I love the little interview they did after the launch. That was really funny to me.
Yeah, and I said that too, because they you know, I was like, man, if this rocket goes off successfully, this red team is going to be the best PR that NASA's had in a long time on this program, because they're like, what a story, right? These like heroic people like run out to the fueled up rocket and crank some nuts. I don't know what they did, but you know, it was.
But that's the funny aspect of that, is that like it's a rocket that's made to be approached while fully fueled. So it's like that. It sounds weird because we forgot that that's how those rockets work, right? And then they went. So like for them, they just drove up and tightened some bolts at a rocket that's meant to be stood next to when fully fueled, right? Like when you. But then you think about it, you're like, shit, I don't know what I would do that. That's intense.
I have a great story along these lines that from the early days of human spaceflight, which I can tell now or later or never.
Let's do it.
Guys choose,
let's do it.
It's kind of like this.
I would love if we're like, we never want to hear this story, Matt.
We were doing the very first ever planetary radio live in a local radio station studio. And we had the then head of structural engineering for SpaceX and a NASA vet on. And this NASA vet was there for John Glenn's launch on the Atlas. And the night before the launch, they discovered that there was apparently a hairline crack inside whatever the lower tank was. I don't know if that was fuel or oxidizer. So they drained it, took the engines off, took the engine off, elected like the smallest red team type guy on the crew to crawl up inside. And he did a repair job from inside the tank, came out, reattached the engine. And Glenn apparently was never the wiser until after he had made the trip. So there you go. That's secondhand, but as far as I know, that's the case. So hats off to the red team.
Wow. That's an epic one. I love the Jake's face of surprise as you mentioned that the NASA vet was at John Glenn's launch, and then you said Atlas instead of shuttle. I was like, oh yeah, you were expecting a different story.
That's right. That's like Paul McCartney, wasn't he? He used to be with a band called Wings, right?
Yeah. That's
it would have been a way crazier story if they'd crawled up inside a shuttle to change the engine.
It's a totally different thing, but it's some stuff that I remember was the very first Falcon 9, right, where they cut off the bottom of the engine nozzle that was like dinged a little, and they were like, man, we don't need that part. And some stuff that would happen in the 60s at NASA, and probably no decade after that would that ever happen. But I don't know, Skylab was pretty wild. Maybe it would have happened there.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of improvisation. Right. You're right. Yeah.
Man. So the first Planetary Radio Live is where they got this story, which was how long ago?
Yeah. And we did many. Oh, man. It took us a while to get to a live show. You know, I'd have to look it up. It was probably around 2005, something like that. But then, you know, since then, all interrupted by the pandemic. We did them all over the place. We, you know, Italy, Toronto, Air and Space Museum, Aquarium of the Pacific, where we had a discussion about why.
It's a good aquarium.
Yeah, why? Oh, it's a great place. I actually used to crawl around in there when it was under construction because I was doing a radio series for them just as a gift to help promote it. We got into a very good discussion of why NASA gets so much money and NOAA gets, you know, pennies. It's not fair is what my response was. That was what we talked about there. But, you know, a lot of the time we just did the show locally at KPCC, the big NPR station in Pasadena, and had a great time doing it. And several at Caltech, we did a show. Was it 2 days or 3 days after the Cassini end of mission, in front of a standing room only crowd at Caltech in the biggest auditorium they have, Beckman. And it was just spectacular because you had the three people at the top of the mission come on stage and just a thunderous standing ovation from the crowd. And it's exactly what people with those kinds of who do that kind of work ought to be getting on a daily basis. But, you know, that's a lot of what the show is about. Sharing what Bill Nye calls the PB&J, the passion, beauty, and joy of space exploration and science.
I went, I was having a little fun before this, and I went to planetary.org to look up the first episode. I wanted to listen to it to see what had, you know, what had gone through, what had changed and what had been exactly the same. And I have to say, it is like remarkably consistent.
Yeah, let me read this description.
Disgustingly, I think is the word you want. You are absolutely right. If you heard only that first show and then you heard like this week's show, you'd say, oh, Planetary Radio. Not sure that's a good thing after 20 years, but okay. Yeah, it hasn't changed much.
I just love that, like, last paragraph of the description is like straight up, you could totally drop this in any episode right now. Like, that's, you nailed it from day one, is what it is. Like, what's up with Bruce Betts. It's Emily Lakdawalla doing random space facts. Like, it is just right on point, you know. And I don't know, maybe did you have any shows like in the backlog before this first one went up? Did you like bank a couple, see how it was, or did you just record and start going like most of us do?
You know, we didn't care much because I cared a lot, but we were only on one radio station when we started. My old college radio station, KUCI in Irvine, 88.9. At the time, it was, I think it was still 24 effective watts. So, you know, not a huge audience. But I think we ran with that pilot. And, you know, sadly, the Challenger disaster came just a few weeks later. Able to do that. Yeah, what am I talking about? Yes, Columbia. We did that live. And we couldn't, I mean, ever since then, because we had to distribute the show first to 5 stations and then to 27 stations and then to well over 100 stations where we still are today, in addition to the podcast, we haven't been able to do anything truly live, you know, recorded live is the best we could do. It hasn't changed that much. We do work a little bit further ahead now, but not by much, because so much timely stuff happens that we want to be on top of. I mean, I hit my deadline for this week's show 2 hours before the liftoff of the SLS. And so I just had to say, you know, by the time you folks hear this, you may know whether it actually happened. So that'll have to be saved for next week.
Yeah, you should never wait on a deadline for Artemis 1, honestly. Like,
no, you can't.
It's unfortunate, but that part's behind us.
That's true.
It's funny how, like, I think there's a lot of people who know you through the podcast, right? Through that's how the mechanism, how they hear you. And yet the show started 2 years before the word podcasting. Like, that's, you know, you were I don't even know actually when it was that you started putting it out as a podcast. Do you remember any of the early days when you were like, hey, what's this new thing going on that we should get in on?
I'm going to have to be, it's like I'm in front of Congress, man. I'm afraid I do not recall.
I'll get that for you. I'll get that. And we'll put it on the record. I'll get that answer to you later. Yeah.
Thank you. I think it was I think we were about 5 years in, but maybe that's too late because we jumped in about 6 months after everybody started talking about podcasts being the hot new thing. And I went to management and I said, we got to do this. This is going to be huge. It wasn't yet. And we did jump in. And it took a while to realize that the podcast was going to give us a lot more freedom because the broadcast show from the start has always been 28 minutes and 50 seconds. Because that's the tyranny of broadcast, man. You're going to send it to multiple radio stations. They have to know from week to week how long it's going to be because they may be plugging it into their automation and they don't want to have to reprogram it every week. So I was constantly cutting interviews down and not being able to include everything. And that's, you know, that remains the worst part of the job. And I kept the podcast just with that format for a while. And then people started saying, hey, we like this show, but how come it's so short? And so now, you know, we range between, typically it's, you know, 45 minutes to, I start to get a little bit anxious if it runs over an hour, the finished podcast. But we will do that on occasion if it's something special. And it's wonderful to have that freedom. Of course, now, you know, I might do a 40-minute interview with somebody and I have to cram that thing into the 13 or 14 minutes that I have for the main feature in the broadcast version of the show. So that's like That's hell. That's one thing I will not miss about the show. And I wish luck to Sarah, my wonderful colleague who's taking over, and our new audio editor that we're about to hire. We're hiring a contract audio editor. Thank goodness. She won't have to be the one-person band that I've been for 20 years. that's really tough. And it does at least let me say, as we do this week, hey, you know, we had such a great conversation with Linda Spilker about the Voyager mission. You want to hear the whole thing? Here it is. Check out the podcast.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to you're getting, it's almost like a cool funnel that, you know, the people you're catching on radio that might not have really considered like seeking out longer form content like this could be like, ooh, that was a really interesting, you know, you're the best 10 minutes of talking with somebody, and then go, oh, I should dive in a little deeper. And, you know, that's like just creme de la creme of content right there. Although it's a pain to pick which 13 minutes. I mean, it's like, yeah, that's gotta be tough.
It's a tease. It's definitely a tease. And, yeah, man, from your mouth to, Apple Podcast ears. I don't know.
History wise, I'm thinking that some Steve Jobs decided to add podcast support to iTunes in like May 2005 is when it was announced. Right, we're going into podcast history here, but Adam Curry had this podcast directory that he had been collecting because he was one of the nerds that started it, right? Then Steve Jobs approached him and said, hey, I would like to put this in iTunes. And that's the thing that started the ball rolling down the hill. So I'm going to guess it was probably 05 when everyone started realizing that it was more than just like nerdy RSS feeds, and there was a place to actually go listen, and iPods were hot. So, I mean, like... It's just interesting how that probably felt like we're taking the show in a completely new direction. And then here we are like 20 years later and like, well, that was the most of the lifetime of the show was like this format.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I knew we had to go in this direction, but nobody had any idea back then how big it was going to be, except for, you know, some of the biggest boosters of the format, but they were right. And, you know, my gosh. All hail Steve Jobs once again. He was dead on.
Yeah, and strangely, Apple has been very benevolent. Like, I don't know, it's the one weird thing that Apple is very benevolent about. That's like, it's this free directory. They've always ran in a free way. That's like, there's so many apps, not even on their platform, built on top of this directory. And like, they only recently started adding like premium Apple Podcast stuff. So it's the. Like, we're doing tech history instead of Matt's interesting podcast history, but I'm just like ruminating on the fact that if that was not treated as weirdly with an Apple, like that whole side of the industry would never have flourished in the way that it did. And I find that quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly it would have taken much longer for podcasting to catch on the way it has.
Yeah. We would just be doing YouTube shows like this probably.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, we're lagging here, but go ahead.
Sorry. No, I'm a microphone freak in addition to, you know, other ways. So there's my Electrovoice RE10, which is the other classic broadcast microphone. The other one being the one that SM7 looks like that you've got there. But I can't tell what the other one is there. Anyway, can't tell. Anyway, classic.
Let's do as little space content as possible in this hour.
I'm sorry. Ask me anything.
The fact that we thought this wouldn't get inside baseball immediately, like, is That's kind of the point, though, like, because we waited as long as possible to have you on this show, right up until the 20th anniversary is what, a week from today, and you're retiring like 2 months from then, or a month. So, you know, we're waiting as long as possible to get any wisdom from you, and then 20 minutes into the show are still avoiding it. So that's good.
Okay, I'll take it there.
Go for it. We are celebrating the 20th anniversary of the show in 2 weeks on the 3rd. That's the closest episode of ours to the 20th anniversary. And so I'm bringing back the first guest we ever had, our executive director emeritus, Lou Friedman, the co-founder of the Planetary Society with Carl Sagan and Bruce Murray. And then we'll have the science guy, and our great COO, Jennifer Vaughn, will come on as well. So, yeah, that'll be – I thought it would be the very last show, But Sarah's just too busy doing her digital community stuff for us. So that's why we're, you know, she will take over on the first show of 2023.
Mm, okay, awesome. Cool. Yeah, no, I wanted to ask, you know, so 20 years of covering planetary science and planetary exploration and all the wonderful stuff that the Planetary Society does. I love to hear the non-scientist, you know, the journalist perspective on how you think that field has changed, because that's like an interesting sort of sub meta story that I like to follow of how it's been, you know, evolving over those years, because like planetary science is so new and it changes a lot pretty quickly. And so I like to hear kind of how you've seen that with all the great interviews you've been able to do.
Yeah. I have seen changes. Fortunately, we were well past the bad times of the 1980s, which is when there were no missions in the pipeline. That's why Carl and Bruce and Lou got together and said, we need a public interest forum to promote planetary science and space science in general, because they knew that people were behind this, but there was just not enough of a voice of it. Well, you know, by the time the show started in 2002, and I had been on staff for 2 years by then, although I was still part-time, I remained part-time for what is still the majority of my 22 years at the Society, because I was also working full-time for a university and doing largely media stuff there, community relations, things like that. But by the time we started the show in 2002, you know, the Mars exploration rovers were already underway, at least in terms of, you know, being put to piece together at JPL. So there were good times. Lots of other missions going on. Voyager still very much underway, as it still is.
the only thing outlasts planetary radio.
Now, I can name a few other things, but you're right. As we heard from Linda Spilker this week, she's hoping that we'll be hearing from the Voyager spacecraft into the 2030s. So, wow. But I'll tell you what has changed most of all is when you get 100 random planetary science scientists together, you're going to see a lot more women and at least few more people of color than you would have in 2002. It'd be most impressive in terms of the representation of women, where now, you know, it wasn't that long ago, there were no missions that had as a principal investigator or as a project scientist, a woman. And now it's not quite a parity yet, but we're getting there. And that's something that I think that, you know, my former colleague, Emily Lakdawalla, and a lot of the rest of us at the Planetary Society, I think that that's something that we've pushed from the start. And it has only been to the benefit of not just planetary science, but science altogether. It's just amazing when you look at what we have revealed of not just the solar system, but the universe across the last 20 years. You know, we had Hubble. That's great. But so many other things happened since then. I mean, just to single out one, Cassini. My gosh, you know, we'd only really seen Saturn and its moons up close once because it was visited by both of the Voyager spacecraft, right? It was, in fact, that's when they changed the trajectory to get the good look at Titan that sent Voyager 1 out of the solar system. I think it was Voyager 2. Do I have it backwards? Oh, man.
I always mix it up, too, every time. Because they launched them out of order and stuff. Yeah, I get a little mixed up with them.
So. Right.
One of them zigged. Yada, yada. Figure it out.
You're right. It's like a Twix. It's like Linda Spilker. I asked her, do you think, you know, if it hadn't been for Cassini and Huygens revealing what they did of Titan, because Voyager showed us essentially nothing of Titan. It couldn't look through the fog. I said, do you think we'd be looking forward to Dragonfly today? And she said, probably not, because we wouldn't know enough about Titan to feel confident that we could send an octocopter to land and then zip around, you know, and taste stuff. And so, you know, all of that over the last 20 years. But then, you know, I've been very lucky with Planetary Radio, pardon me, because, yeah, we're the Planetary Society. So we pretty much stick to planetary science, but not exclusively. And particularly, I have been given the freedom on Planetary Radio. I can talk cosmology now and then. You know, we had Brian Keating of UCSD and the Simons Observatory on a couple of weeks ago talking about, you know, looking back to the beginning of the universe and learning, you know, what the hell dark energy is, to say nothing of dark matter. And it's great fun because, man, that's, I want to explore all this stuff, which is why I always open the show by saying, you know, across our solar system and beyond, because we get to do that. I hope that Sarah, who is an astrophysicist, will also have that freedom that she'll be able to, you know, venture a little bit beyond the Oort cloud now and then.
That's a good tagline. Man, Dragonfly is going to be the GOAT. Yeah. I just want to mention that's going to be the GOAT for sure. Like, come on. That's just, every time I think about it, that mission is going to be the GOAT.
Another great mission led by a woman, too. So
yeah. And at this point, I can say, God APL's riding that one because, oh boy. APL, here's the thing about APL. APL, they have Christmas parties all the time, Jake. So they swap mission details nonstop.
they love their upstart reputation there. You know, the space folks there. And say, oh, no, we're not JPL East. They're APL West. And, you know, it's not entirely fair, but it is amazing the work that they're doing. And, yeah, Zibby Turtle is just terrific. You know, we were talking to her years and years ago, and I am so happy to see her running that mission. That I, man, that just, there's so much that hopefully I'm still going to have the chance not only to be heard on Planetary Radio occasionally, not too often, but other stuff that the Society is going to ask me to do, like things in our new member community, which will be starting up really in earnest early next year. We hope to do a lot of live and interactive stuff there. And I hope that that's going to give me the chance to continue to talk to some of these people, because this is really the selfish reason why I do this. Don't tell anybody, but it makes me credible so that I can call up these heroes and bring them on the show and have conversations with them. And, you know, it's what you guys get to do too. So
yeah,
I think,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
This is the secret here. Yeah. 100%. Don't tell, don't broadcast this. Yeah. well, do you want to talk more about what your plans are? Because I've been saying retiring, but I guess that's not exactly true. You're retiring from the show, but you're not retiring. So what other kind of plans do you have in terms of what you're going to do once Sarah takes over?
Well, first of all, the number one thing I'm looking forward to, I kind of hinted at already, and it's the fact that I won't have this deadline hanging over me every week because, you know, we're now, approaching, I think, 1,200 shows. Every single show has had new content. Every single show has had a new What's Up segment with Bruce Betts at the end, our chief scientist. And I'm proud of that, but I don't really want to continue doing that. So that'll be really fun. But I was surprised. I mean, I hope to eventually cut back my hours a little bit, which have been well past full time, I can tell you. I'm very pleased because our COO, the aforementioned Jennifer Vaughn, has had several things that she has asked me to start working with. We have a very distinguished advisory council at the Planetary Society. A lot of these people are past guests of Planetary Radio, and I'm going to be doing some work with them as sort of a liaison with management at the Society. And I'm excited about that. We just had another of our meetings with the advisory council last Friday, where this was kind of announced, this new relationship. My friend and our board member, Bob Picardo, the good doctor from Star Trek Voyager, is sort of the head of the chair of that group. He was on our advisory council before he was appointed to our board of directors. And that's going to make it, you know, even more of a joy to be part of that. That's one thing. The digital community that I mentioned, which we're now, I think we're more calling the member community, is really exciting because we have, you know, 50,000 members And of course, we love it when we could get to interact with them, but we have not provided as many opportunities to interact with them or for them to interact with each other as we really have always wanted to. And this is going to give us that opportunity. And this is really great credit to Sarah. Sarah Alamed, who's coming in as the new host to Planetary Radio, because she is the primary person, along with a lot of other great people on staff, like Kate Howells, who have been working their tails off putting this thing together. And it's tough, but because there are a lot of issues to work out, many of them technical, but we'll have a great app all kinds of other ways. Channels that where people can set up their own little, you know, subreddits and things like that. But within our community for our members, it's going to be very, very exciting. And I really look forward to participating in that. We're going to do some live events continuing beyond that. One of my favorite events every other year, and I haven't been able to go the last couple, is the Planetary Defense Conference. You know, Planetary Defense is a big, big core initiative of ours. I just had Lindley Johnson and Kelly Past from the Planetary Defense Coordination Office at NASA. They were just back on the show a couple of weeks ago, putting the DART mission in context with all of our other efforts. Hey, there's another thing that I've seen a huge difference in 20 years. We've gone from like, yeah, planetary defense, that would be a good idea, to, hey, we're really, really working on this now. It's like there's money behind it. There's an office at NASA. There are missions. There are, you know, big sky surveys being funded, and we're finding these things. And if we could just get Neo Surveyor up there, then we might actually be able to survive. But anyway, that's another digression. Every other year, the entire world's planetary defense community gets together somewhere around the world. And this time it's going to be in Vienna, Austria. There's usually a public event attached to that. And I will be out there to moderate that public event, you bringing in some of these international planetary defense stars. Hopefully, you know, we'll have a nice audience for that show as well. So I hope that we're, you know, as we see the pandemic hopefully ramping down, continuing to ramp down, that we'll be able to get out there and be in front of more people as well.
That sounds really fun, being able to do sort of like the, exactly what you said, right? Because the tyranny of the weekly schedule, it can constrain you in a lot of ways, right? And so this sounds like we're going to be like unleashing Matt into the more bespoke,
go outside,
like, you
Matt.
Know, like the more like bespoke, special one-time things, right? You know, so.
Yeah, watch out for Mr. Hyde. It's going to be great. And there is nothing like, there's nothing more fun than doing what you guys do. You know, this live interaction. I do a lot to, I always tell my guests, you know, I'm going to work really hard in post-production to make all of us sound our best. But there is nothing like the excitement of live, especially when you're on a stage in front of a whole bunch of people. And it is so enlivening to coin a phrase. I really look forward to doing more of that stuff. There are some other things that they've talked about me being involved with, but you know, we'll see how it works out.
There was a comment in the chat here from Bradley that you now get to sit in the independent podcaster corner for big events, which sounds like a demotion, but let me introduce you, Matt, to having no responsibility at an event, and all you can do is just sit there and have fun. Because that's what Jake and I do. We go into these rooms, everyone's tweeting up a storm, trying to cover every little detail, and we're just like roaming around, chatting with people, and, you know, gathering future content in our minds. So it's not all
that's
bad.
That's often my experience. I mean, yeah, I may have, you know, headphones on and a hand mic and a little recorder in my hand picking up interviews where I can, but it's a blast not to, you know, I suck at social media. I should be tweeting several times a day. I don't. I am so sorry, Elon.
Probably not currently worried about your Twitter feed.
No. Yeah, he hasn't been in touch lately. Yeah. Which is probably a good thing. I'm not good at it. And so it's really fun. You know, what you've just described that you guys get to do. I mean, I think the last time I did this kind of stuff, well, I did it. I've done it a little bit since then. I got to moderate the NIAC symposium, NASA Innovative mm-hmm. Advanced Concepts, which is great fun. And I have a little table there and I'll pull people aside. But I was doing their live webcast as well. But Yuri's Night, great fun. I'm very proud, by the way, to be one of the founders of Yuri's Night. I produced the podcast the first 3 years. Sorry, the webcast the first 3 years. It is so much fun. They get a little table in the VIP area and I can just, you know, grab people and, you know, say, hey, do you have 15 minutes? Come over and we'll talk a little bit and then use it on the show later. So.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
I have a secret.
Free yourself from having an outline. I thought this was going to be you giving us wisdom, and all of a sudden we're just here saying, "Stop with the agenda, Matt."
I'm having fun though.
I was going to say I have a secret career ambition of being able to moderate panels kind of the same way you do. I'm trying to figure out how to break into that scene. I think that would be really fun to do that because it feels like it's doing this but live and you know kind of having a little bit of a even more of a captive audience, right? And I think that's pretty exciting.
We just need to make sure any conference organizers only listen to our other shows then, not this one.
yeah.
Or we need to have our own conference. Not this one in particular, meaning the one with Matt, but just like listen to We Martians and Miko, because not like, you know, if they're like, this is what we're getting to moderate the panel, this seems like hijinks. We don't want this.
I think smart people like the Explore Mars people, Chris Carberry and his team, it's like what we do with the last session every year at Explore Mars, where we just take on some question like why Mars, you know, and have a great time with it and put a huge crowd on stage.
Don't get Jake started like this. Just don't get him started.
I'm telling you, Jake, go for it. It is such a blast, man. It is like, it is surfing the wave. That's what it feels like because you are just trying to feel every little current and, you know, just stay slightly ahead of it. And there is nothing like that feeling of being live, which, you know, we are experience a bit of here. This is definitely an example of that. But doing it in front of a live crowd and then hearing them, you know, applaud and laugh, hopefully appropriately at appropriate moments, there's nothing like it. It's the ham in me all the way.
Yeah, we should do that, Jake.
Yeah.
We should do that.
I'd want to get too involved in answering the questions and not just asking them. That's my problem with that one. I'm too opinionated to go on a panel like that.
That's the trick. That's like, you know, if I'm on the other side of the microphone, as I appear to be now, it's like, I'll just ramble on, man. But if I'm asking the questions, I'm a little bit more disciplined, I hope. But man, now it's like I'll just ramble on as, you know, you guys can go get coffee if you want.
just do this one shot. It's the Matt Show. Welcome.
Yeah, we'll just
he's retired from the other show and taken over this one.
Yeah. Exactly. Man. Oh, that's great. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll have to put in the gears in motion for Off NomCon or whatever. We'll just host our own. We can have all the panels.
I love that. Off NomCon.
Our ultimate plan is to fly out to what we always call the Kansas Cosmodrome, even though it's called the Cosmosphere, which is this museum in like Hutchinson, I think.
Hutchinson. Yeah, that sounds
they
right.
Have a I've been shocking invited, but amount I've never of good been. Stuff there. They have Apollo 13. I think they have Liberty Bell 7. I had a conversation this week with somebody about the Cosmosphere. So I feel like it may be in my near future. But we've always talked about how we should. It's geographically basically the center of the U.S. I think that's like it's just slightly exaggerated from what I just said, but it's pretty much like, I mean, flights right now suck, but everyone could fly there reasonably cheap because it's so in the middle. And then we just have a little conference in the middle of nowhere.
I say road trip, but yeah, boy, that's ripe for it. That I've always heard that is a wonderful place to visit. And I bet they would go for it, man. I just got, how far is that from Kansas City? It can't be too far, right?
I think it's Kansas like 3 City, hours. Mo. from what I hear.
That's not too bad. Yeah, I just got, apparently the Kansas City Royals are doing a STEM event before a game that they're doing in May, a home game, obviously. And I got invited.
May or may not have been why I have recently been talking to somebody about the Cosmosphere. We should chat,
well,
Matt.
I wonder if that's happening at about the same time, because that would give me another excuse to make it out that way. They wanted to get in touch with our poet laureate on Planetary Radio, Dave Fairchild, who sends us a poem every week to answer the space trivia contest question. And because he lives not that far away, and they wanted him to come up. And so I said, yeah, I'll be happy to tell Dave. Well, it turns out Dave and his wife kind of met because of the Kansas City Royals, and they're both Royals fans. And so they're going to be there. That's what we're all about on Planetary Radio, wow, bringing people together. And so, yeah, it would just be, I would love to go. Wouldn't that be a blast? You know, STEM and Major League Baseball. What a great pairing.
Just keep it in mind, everyone. You know when the baseball season starts, right, Jake? Super tuned in on that.
Now-ish,
right?
With me? Is it like...
We've done baseball content the last couple of weeks on the show here, Jake. So, you know, pull this together.
Yeah, well, I'm not picking it up very, very quickly. I'm sorry. Oh, man. Huh. Okay. All right. Well, yeah. I can't stop thinking about baseball now. I'm like, when does the season start? I don't know when it starts.
April. April is when it starts.
It's all derailed
it's
now.
It's basically,
I was like, where was
my
I going?
Birthday, pitchers and catchers report, and then April is the real season. So.
You know, okay, who's a huge, right, baseball fan? I'm not as big a fan as I used to be. Bill Nye.
Big baseball guy?
Oh, yeah. Bill Nye loves him a Major League Baseball game. Bill Nye has a patented device. I hope he doesn't mind my saying. It is patented, so it should be safe.
Like
he has a
record,
patented
so yeah.
device. It's a patented device. I kid you not. You put it over the end of your bat. And like if you're doing fungo, and you get tired of picking up baseballs, you just use your bat, stick it over the ball that's down there in the turf. Little rubber fingers pick up the ball, pick up the bat, pull the ball off, whoop, boom, like that. And I don't know how many of them he has sold. I don't even know if they're for sale. But I know that this is like an early invention of Bill's. And he loves going to baseball games.
Wow. I'm looking this up. This is amazing.
Talk about inside.
Yeah, wow.
Inside baseball.
Bill Nye, the baseball guy.
Bill Nye, the baseball guy. Who knew? Who knew?
There it is. There he is. There's the boss. I have to salute. It's all physics, man. It's all physics.
Salute.
Excuse me.
I have to salute.
Wearing the hat, Bill.
Who's his team? I got to figure this out now.
Oh, man. You know, I'm not sure anymore. I think it might be the Mariners because he lived in Seattle for so long.
He's from Washington, right? Because he used to work for Boeing up there, I think, right?
He's more a DC guy. That's where he grew up mostly. But then it's when he went to Seattle to be an engineer. Yeah, if you ever are with Bill Nye and a 747 is anywhere within sight, he will point out to you. He will mention the piece of the tail assembly on a 747 that he had some responsibility for. In fact, SOFIA, the Flying Infrared Observatory that just retired, very sadly, that plane, that exact 747, Bill Nye worked on. And so when he and I went out there together, I'm not kidding you, when he and I went out there together, he was so proud, and he was climbing. We were climbing all over and got to climb around inside where the telescope is. And then they had a bulkhead that they had reserved for VIPs to sign, and Bill signed that bulkhead. He was the first person to get to sign it.
No wonder y'all are the only ones trying to save Sophia.
Well, we did go back. We were on a flight. It was our great video guy, Merck Boyan, and chief scientist, Bruce Betts. We spent an entire night on Sophia. That was a blast.
Yeah, I remember
that.
You did a show in there, I think, right? I feel like I remember that's in
we
my
did.
Foggy memory of you just chatting while you're flying in that thing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We got a couple of great videos. Bruce did some really good random space fact videos, which is his really wonderful and hilarious series. My grandson, my six-year-old grandson, is a huge fan of Random Space Fact. And then there was a video that kind of centered on me. And our Merck is just a brilliant video guy. And God, we had a good time. It was so much fun being in that airplane.
It's the only time tough the What's Up segment became audio, What's Out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it is pretty, well, we were truly loud, up. Right? Was it? You were really putting the noise dampeners to work in there, I'm sure.
It's really loud. It's very loud because to save weight, they've pulled out all of the nice looking interior insulation, in, you know, that is inside the fuselage. You still have, they were like worn out, old, grotty seats, but they were the original seats from when it was a passenger plane or a cargo plane, I guess. And so we sat in those and, you know, I think Bruce and Merck got a little bit of sleep, but it's very noisy. So we had to wear headphones with the intercoms, which was cool because, you know, we had the cool looking military style headset microphones and all that. And that's how we were able to talk to each other and record. But yeah, we got up into the cockpit and had a really good time.
Huh. Man.
That's, I'm trying to think. No, that's the highest I've been on the show. The second highest.
That we know of.
Yeah. The second most altitude that I've achieved on planetary radio was in the Andes when, you know, I went to see the ALMA array, Atacama Large Millimeter Array. And we were at 5,000 meters, 16,500 feet. And I just love showing people my business card because it's up there at the high side and I got a big smile. And in my hand, you can see the little cans of a can of oxygen that they issued to each of us. Because if you didn't take a hit off of that can of oxygen, you were going to be on the ground within 2 or 3 minutes. You had to take a hit like every 2 or 3 minutes. Otherwise, you just
take a hit. You remain really that high. Silly. Yeah.
Yeah. The highest he's ever been on the show.
That's right. Yeah, in every way. I'm telling you, man.
We got there. It took us 48 can't... minutes, but we got there. This is where we were trying to go. Not show.
I'm not going to say that hypoxia is a recommended habit that anybody should pick up, but it was kind of fun.
Man, I would love to go out there sometime. Anyway. That's a place definitely on my bucket list. Yeah. Probably really
you
hard
should.
To get
to. I've gotten the closest I've been to anywhere like that would be like the Haleakala in Maui, right? Which is like, it's only 3,000 meters, I think. But it's a similar idea where it's like, it looks like a different planet. You're just like, what is this place? Like, it's just all bizarre and red and dry and cold and you're in Hawaii and it shouldn't be cold, but everything's just weird about it. And yeah, I imagine that. Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah. Yeah. So.
It's on my list. It's a national park, so it's on the list, Jake. It's probably better than Joshua Tree. Right.
Probably better than Joshua Tree.
I love Joshua Tree, though.
We're not going to get into it.
I love going there. Mauna Kea. I got to get up Mauna Kea someday. I've had several invitations. I just have. Mm. I've never been to the Big Island. But when I go, that'll be my excuse. And we hope. I've always wanted to do a Planetary Radio Live in the big auditorium that they have down at the base of the mountain, which just seems like a great place to do that kind of thing. But yeah, especially now with the Inouye Solar Telescope up and running, the Keck's, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are my shrines, man. I love going to those places. You guys ever been to the Hale to Palomar to see the Hale telescope and go under that dome?
Nope.
It's a masterpiece. You need to do that someday. It is so cool to be under that dome with that 200-inch scope, which was for, you know, it's kind of dwarfed now, but for so many years it was the biggest telescope on the planet, and it's just a beautiful facility. It's like I'm in tears when I go there.
We gotta do some
something about telescopes. The telescope thing, I don't know what it is about it, but like they're just the facilities end up kind of being like you say, it's your chapel or whatever, right?
Yeah, they're churches. They're churches for space nerds, for sure.
there's churches absolutely, for spacers, man. Right? You get the same kind of shrines feeling when you summer. Walk into a cathedral, right? Yeah.
Even when you go to like Greenwich and it's like, it's going to an old church for space nerds because it's like a place you wouldn't want to do stargazing right now, but you still are like, wow, look at this thing. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly, that is exactly how I felt when I went to Greenwich. And I was there to see, I think it was H2 or H4, you know, the first chronograph that really was accurate enough to use to figure out longitude. That's exactly how I felt, man. And they bring you into the little observatory there, where it's like the astronomer royals have worked for centuries. It's just, oh my God, it's such a wonderful feeling to be in a place like that. It's so inspiring.
I don't know why my photo search is failing me right now, but I did walk by. I feel like I sent you a picture, Jake, and I don't know why it's not in my photo library, but when I was in Milan, I didn't get to go in the building, but I got to walk like up to where Schiaparelli, where his dome was, that he did all the famous sketches of Mars. And it's an awesome looking building. And you can walk by and see the dome from the street, even if you can't get in. They were closed when I was there. But like, it is funny to put it that way, that like, there's the immaculately constructed churches on the tops of mountains. And then there's all the old ones that were built like wherever, you know, cities were back in the day when it was when there were no lights.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so many of these great cathedrals of science, you know, built in large part, by, you know, with money from old rich people who wanted well remembered for good stuff. And it was that way with the cathedrals of old as well, you know? And that gives me another reason to go to Milan. I've been to Italy a couple of times, and I've got to tell my wife, who's an Italian American who lived in Italy for a year. We have to go to Milan. I didn't know that you could go into the dome there, or at least see it.
I forget. We were flying the last time we were there. We were flying home from Milan, so we stayed a night there. And whatever day it was, there was like the one day they were closed, and I was like, ah, damn it! I wanted to schedule a trip. But hey, we got quite a Matt on tour schedule we're building out here. Hawaii, Milan. Where else are we going?
We got to go back
to
Atacama.
Where else didn't you go to? In fact, were there other places that you were like, I should have went there when I was running this podcast or this radio show?
Yeah, what are the regrets? That's a great question. I'll tell you one for sure. Arecibo. I wish I could have gone. I've known so many great people who worked there, got their start there, some of them. Amazing stuff that was done there. Just maybe the saddest thing that happened across the 20 years of doing the show was the collapse of that dish. You know, that right now it does not look like it's going to be replaced. I still have hope. It's so important to that community there in Puerto Rico. I hope that happens. Another one that's very related, Greenbank. Another place another real shrine of science that I would love to visit.
Yeah, that's a fun one because of whole like the national radio dead zone or whatever it's called, the quiet zone.
Right.
Yeah. And there's that like community of people that think it's bad to live near Wi-Fi and they live like right nearby. You ever read about that?
I haven't heard that, but wow, that's a great story.
Don't go too far down that rabbit hole. No, there's a community there. Probably love Starlink. They're super pumped about Starlink.
I told you Mauna Kea. There must be other places that I've considered that I really would love to, that I've thought about going to that I haven't made it to yet. But those,
I'm assuming Orbit. Orbit's pretty good.
Oh, Orbit, of course. No question about it. Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to talk next week. There's a good friend who is with one of the companies that wants to build a big orbital hotel, basically a big orbital station with gravity, artificial. And I've said, man, if you can get me up there, I think you need to put me up there with a microphone. I'll
do
it.
Maybe you can do a panel. Can you do a panel and maybe Jake can host it?
Yeah.
I could be on it.
Yeah, as long as I'm on it. I just, you know, the closest I have come is sticking my head up inside Spaceship Two. That's about it. out at the spaceship company. But I still, and my dream like, as.
Nah.
Well, it wasn't, they hadn't put in the interior yet, but no, man, I was thrilled, man. I literally, that's all I got to do was stick my head up inside the hatch and kind of look around. And that was pretty exciting. But I my dream years ago, before I knew better, was to someday get out as far as Jupiter and be able to look down on that mind-boggling surface. You know, not realizing back then that I'd be dead within half an hour. but now I would absolutely settle for a nice suborbital flight. But yeah, getting up in low Earth orbit and spending a couple of days up there, I'd give pretty much anything for that, short of a child.
Short of a child.
And they're both adults now, so they probably would object.
Great way to draw the line.
They'd have legal standing to object if I tried to trade one of them for a ride.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Well, there we have it.
Well, that's I can't think of a better place to end the show than that.
And Matt's love for his children. Oh, breaking news, maybe.
We may just have the news. Okay, I do have the news.
I'm going full frame.
Okay.
It actually came 3 minutes ago. I was hoping that it would happen during this show. You are very likely, guys, the first podcast to be able to share the news that our dear LightSail 2, which is why I'm wearing this shirt, is no more. LightSail is dead. Long live LightSail. You knew it was coming. You guys told me you had heard the preliminary word from Aerospace Corp that it had re-entered. We knew this was coming. It's been 3.5 years. It actually took much longer to re-enter than we expected, but we now have the official word from the chief scientist, Bruce Betts, that our light sail has met its demise.
What is no longer up, light sail 2. You did so correct. Good. I did see even early this week, Jonathan McDowell was tweeting, "Hey, everybody, keep an eye on the light sail orbit. Like, things, it's coming down quick now." So I was like, "Oh, this." But the number seemed like, "Is it really going to come down that quick?" And then I was like, "Oh, I guess based on the shape of that spacecraft, yeah, that's going to be quick once it starts picking up some drag."
If you look at the curve on our website, let me make sure I'm in the frame here. It's like this. Shoo, down, 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 down. Because, man, the deeper you go, the more drag. Then takes you deeper, the more drag. And, you know, as Bruce says, we have this itty bitty spacecraft with very low mass and these gigantic wings. And, yeah, it was, fated to happen quickly. Yeah. Right. Especially with all the solar activity picking up, man,
yeah,
what
right.
a success. We have been very emotional over this. I can tell you that a lot of my colleagues, I'm sure, are in tears right now. Among them, maybe Bruce, I wish I had video of that. It's been a hell of a run. I mean, when you consider that we started in 2005, oh, look at that image of the Middle East and those beautiful sails. Thank you for posting that for putting that up.
That's awesome.
We started with Cosmos 1. Yeah, we tried in 2005, and here we are, 17 years later. More than 17 years later, it has been a hell of a run. I am very proud to be able to share that with you guys and be able to, I'm sure, be the first to mention it to a live audience.
That's awesome. That was such a cool mission.
Yeah. I'm bummed. I went to go, I ran off to grab, I have this bag where I keep all my mission patches sewed on and stuff. And it's a new bag and I was transferring stuff over. And I think I haven't transferred my light sail patch over. So it's not on
Come
here.
On.
Now I'm like, I thought I had a really good moment, but I have the mission
props.
Patch somewhere. So yeah.
I'm so glad to hear we're going to have that status.
Yeah. You
got to
go find
cool.
that, Jake.
That's
gotta go
very
find that.
Cool. I yeah. love it. Yeah.
I'll find it. I'll post a picture. We'll do that. But
I got a great jacket that has patches from all of the Apollo missions. And the center is the main Apollo program patch. And it's like it was given to me by one of my brothers, my craziest brother. He loves it when I say that. And I it's like, where can I wear that? I knew I was going to see Rusty Schweikert, who I know pretty well, Rusty Schweikert of Apollo 9. And I said, Rusty, will you do this for me? So I put the jacket on at some event, and I had a sign all made for Rusty to hold up next to me. I turned around so that my back was in the shot, and there's Rusty with a big smile holding a sign pointing at the jacket that says, "Nice work, Stephen." And it was that's my brother pointing to the jacket, and it was fun.
Amazing.
That was like the best thing I could ever do for my brother Stephen. He still owes me.
Give him up for the flight.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
I could do arrangements. So.
You're right.
Awesome.
Well, Matt, this has been awesome hanging out. I appreciate all the wisdom and the hijinks that you're sharing here. So it's going to be...
And 20 years of Planetary Radio. We appreciate that a lot.
Paving the way. Mm-hmm. Whenever we tell people we do space podcasts, they're like, oh yeah, I listen to a couple, mostly just Planetary Radio. And we're like, yeah, that's good. Keep listening to that one. Ours are good too, but that's fine. We're not mad about it.
You guys do an outstanding job. You have a well-earned reputation for, I don't know about for this show, but no, this one, I've
mostly
had a blast.
In the
this has been
Society,
such fun.
It's Planetary Society's second favorite podcast is this one, mostly because we just force everyone to come on the show and hang out.
That's probably fair. Yeah. And there are a lot more. You have to have Sarah now on now.
Mm-hmm.
And she'll be great fun to talk to. But you guys have done terrific work. Keep, you know, getting us out there, working toward the red planet. And because that's what we all want to see, boots on Mars, right? Mm-hmm. As I said once at Explore Mars, I don't want to see boots on Mars. I want to see a shoe store on Mars.
That solves the why. You're right. Commerce.
Thank you.
There you go.
You humored me. Thank you. Thank you for laughing at that. It's Perfect. Been fun, guys. I love this.
Jake, you got anything going on lately here?
Yeah, not quite. I'm cooking a few things up. So, like I said last time, I'm still working on getting ready for the end of InSight. So that's a Mars mission that's coming to an end here pretty quick. So, going to have a good interview for that. And other than that, I think we're going to take a break for Thanksgiving next week, right? Because I think that's when is it Turkey Day next week? That's when it is. That's when you guys do it.
Yep. And no big space events have happened recently that we need to talk about on the show. So we'll just wait until December 1st to have another podcast.
Yeah, nothing
honestly,
big going on.
I have nothing to say about Artemis 1. It was a beautiful launch, and like I have no analysis for you beyond that at the moment. Like we talked about it forever, and it's finally launched. It's great.
Yeah.
Go Artemis.
Exactly.
So we'll catch you when Artemis. It's coming back around. Yeah, by the time we talk next, it'll have been on closest approach and all, and the images are going to be awesome as that thing goes, you know, past the moon. It's going to be the solar array selfie cams are great.
They're really good. So any space image with the spacecraft in the shot, as we just saw with LightSail.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
Yes.
Just instantly the best shot. So, all right, everybody. Thanks for hanging out. Matt, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks,
this was so much fun.
Thank you guys. Great fun.
See ya.
Take care.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. End of test.